Very good, and welcome to the Fred Report Technical Market Call for May 19th, 2022. Before I really get started on the call, I want to make sure that I wish everybody a very happy expiration. You will note that the SPDR is trading back and forth repeatedly above and below 390, and I think that we're actually going to head for 395 to 400 by Friday. And the vehicle that I'm using to trade that is Apple, which is currently trading back and forth above 140. In terms of the broader picture, which is what most people are interested in, we still think that this is a trading bottom area. We're still sticking with that 130, sorry, looking at Apple, 380 area as being one that is going to hold the market here, and as it has so far. We still think we can see a rally now. Again, we did not get above the 410, 411 area we mentioned, so we are vulnerable here. We could just blow up, but I'm still looking at some of the indicators and thinking that we're going to try to trade up into the end of the week. And then possibly trade up into Memorial Day. Let's talk about the internals for a minute here. Frankly, the title of last week's weekly should have been "So Bad, It's Probably Good." The internals were so weak last week that they almost have to start to improve here. If they don't, obviously things are going to go down and in an incredibly violent fashion. But that would be very unusual, and would say there's more wrong here than I think is wrong. Realize that one of the hardest jobs I have is that people want levels without reference to what the market is doing at those levels. So we came up with 400 to 380 as an area that should probably hold the market. Now we have to see some improvement in these internals. If we don't, it's not going to work. But we're still maintaining our dollar cost averaging strategy. And again, every chart that we mentioned in the chart book as being viable, you should be dollar cost averaging rather than just plunging in here. But we still see the market as holding this area for a while. We will probably make new lows afterwards. That is to be expected given the momentum on the downside. After a rally, when we get overbought again, we will probably make new lows. We are not at all convinced, by the way, that even though the rest second part of the year after the first quarter could be better than the first part, we do not think there's going to be a V bottom either. We think there's going to be some basing action, sort of Richard Pryor type behavior, more like after a typical down move. And again, you know, we had a question from a consulting level client earlier today. Can the market rally without tech? And the answer is yes, absolutely it can, but probably not super high quality tech. In other words, some tech is going to rally. We recently, in fact, yesterday, rebought Microsoft and sold Intel, our defensive play in the tech in our sector review. So we are in Apple, which we think is very high quality, Microsoft and AVGO, which is trading well and is a high relative strength name. But we are not looking at the Pelotons and that sort of thing. We think that those could be permanently impaired. Permanently impaired is a nice way of saying that they could continue going down even if the market rallies. Look at the rally that we had from 2003 to 2007 for an example of the kind of rally we can have after, you know, when tech has had a problem. We think that's what's going to happen. And again, we're still overweight staples, XLP, which is trading reasonably well, XLB materials, which are trading reasonably well. You know, that's how we're going to play this thing. We'll have to see how it works. But this is all, you know, and energy, of course, all fairly according to plan. Let's talk about the bond market because that's very interesting here. Bonds were actually up yesterday. We had a question on TLT. Would we be selling TLT here? The answer is no. Fortunately, TLT has actually started to rally again. It looks like it's making a little bit of a bottom. I'm amazed that the accumulation model is as strong as it is. I think the reason for that is that you're going to see the market, we're going to see a recession at the end of June, two quarters of negative economic growth. That will give the Fed some cover to essentially not raise interest rates at the level they've been raising them, and that means that we'll see a little bit of relief in the bond market. We are still watching very carefully, by the way, Fred Victor X-ray, the five-year. That is still down from the 30 area we were talking about as being resistance on that. And we want to see MUB, municipals, actually start to hold up. And they are holding a little bit today. What we really want to see on MUB is a move above 105.50 to say that we've got some bottoming signs. We haven't seen that yet. But we think municipals are going to be a little bit smarter than the treasuries here, and that's where we're going to see bottoming signs in bonds. I did tell my consulting-level client this morning on our call, if you want a bond ladder for clients, now's the time. And that's what we would do. We'd buy a bond ladder today or this week, into next week, with the idea being that we're going to capture some pretty good rates over the next 6 to 8 months. In terms of oil and gas, gasoline is still looking very strong. We think gas prices are going to be up. UGA is pulling back today after making new highs. Not at all unusual, but it's a strong chart. We think that can go higher, and certainly gas prices in Atlanta have had a surge, and that's even before Governor Kemp has taken off the no gas tax regime, so they'll be higher by May 25th unless they do something about that. Oil also looks reasonably strong here. We think that those markets are going to be up. In terms of the grains, we are getting close to June. We're looking at CORN and SOYB. We've mentioned that those July contracts go to spot. We could see some relief there as those contracts go to spot and the July crop gets off the boards and delivered. And wheat is still strong. We note that there have been some issues with several countries, India in particular, having a much worse wheat harvest likely because of weather, which happens to occur in those markets, and some countries are banning food exports. There could be some issues there. We still think those prices are higher. That's an area that we would be trading. Let's look and see what happens the first week or two of June. If we get a dip there, we might want to buy it. In terms of international, overshadowed by all the fun stuff in the U.S. market, GXC is actually holding the 80 area, and if it can get above 83, it's probably a good sign of a bottom. The other Chinese ETFs are holding as well. That's very heartening for a little bit of favorable market action coming after June. We'll have to see how that goes, but at least those markets aren't falling apart completely. We're looking at EWL as still being a better opportunity than something just generally European, and we still favor the U.S. over international. But again, watch your emerging markets. If China holds, emerging markets could start to do a little bit better here. In terms of the currencies, let's just take a quick look at that. The dollar has hit our target area and exceeded a little bit. It's now back down. And again, we are, not super bullish on the dollar here. We think that actually that market's going to start to come off. We're trying to buy euros for our trip to Europe in September. With that, I am going to turn the call over to Jeff Garbaz, see if we can have some discussion here. That's probably going to benefit everybody more than me just talking, as I'm not saying anything really new. Our forecasts basically remain the same. So, Jeff, do you have anything for us?
How are you?
Normal.
Good. Hey, so first question is, we had a down 4% yesterday. What do you make of that?
We're getting to the point. Well, and first of all, what yesterday did was very interesting. It filled the gap on the spider that we had going up. You know, filled a couple of different gaps that we had after the rally. So I'm looking at that as not necessarily being a selling climax, but it's certainly a good sign to give up. And for the first time, we did get some texts from, you know, friends and stuff saying, should we sell all our equities here, right? Those people were notably absent in December. So we're fairly heartened by the action.
A lot of times you get like a down more than 2% move, the next day you gain back like half of it. So would it be a surprise to you today if we, if by the end of the day we were up like 2%?
Not at all. I think Apple's going to lead it. Apple could be at 143 or so by the end of the day. They're playing, Jeff, they're playing expiration games, as I'm sure you see. But you know, the fact Apple's sitting at 140.09 is sort of amusing after all this. But yeah, I think we are going to actually be up today.
Okay, so I want to talk about the Russell, because the Russell, look at it like a chart over the last year. It basically ended its rally in end of June of last year, and ever since then, it's basically just gone. It went sideways until January. It had a little up move in October into the beginning of November, but that was the only really up move that it had. So let's call it sideways from July until January, and now it's basically fallen out of bed. So we're coming up on a year. Do you put any significance on the fact that we're almost at a year now on really kind of crappy performance?
That's an interesting question, but I don't really look at it in terms of time. What I am looking at is you're seeing some of the smaller cap relative strength stuff do better, like DWAS is doing substantially better than IWM. And I think that we're going to see small cap do well later in the summer. Jeff, pretty much is not the way to put it. I am in the camp that we're going to have a negative quarter in June, and that'll put us in a recession. Growth recession, it is true, but a recession nonetheless. And if that's the case, small cap does best coming out of a recession. That's my favorite speculative vehicle to come out of a recession in, rather than tech. And if that occurs, the Russell should do well, but there are things that'll do better.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I also think that if that happens, we're not going to keep getting, you know, 50 basis point rate hikes every single month.
Right.
Because, I mean, just look at leading indicators today. It was supposed to be 0.3, and it came in at minus 0.3. We're getting – the signs are kind of all over the place. And now with where gasoline has gone to, it's really started to impact people. And Fred, by the way, there's a study out today that said that they expect gasoline to be at $5 by the end of the summer, number one.
Yeah.
And number two, in the state of Washington, which has a lot of extra fees on gasoline, it actually just went over $10 a gallon. I'm not talking about Washington, D.C. I'm talking
Washington
about
Washington State, yeah.
Which to me seems like, okay, we're getting really extreme now. But, you know, for the 75% of the population that lives paycheck to paycheck, the price of gasoline is becoming more and more of an issue psychologically.
Jeff, it really is. I was at Costco yesterday filling up my mom's Honda Civic, and I looked at some guy in an Explorer, and I said, Jesus Christ, it cost me $20 to fill up this car right now. These gas prices are ridiculous. And the response, again, I've done that a couple different times, but the response isn't getting better, right? And, you know, Jeff, the other – I went by Perimeter Mall yesterday, and Jeff knows Atlanta. For those of you that don't know Atlanta, Perimeter Mall is probably the second most upscale mall in the city, and Lenox and Phipps, the two biggest upscale malls, have become sort of gang-ridden. So most people are going to Perimeter, which is near where I live, and the amount of people in there for lunch and stuff like that was easily half of what you normally see. And I go there for lunch once or twice a week, so I know those figures. So, yeah, you're seeing some real impact here. And I think, you know, that's going to give the Fed some shade to not raise interest rates as aggressively.
Yeah. What do you think about this idea? So you don't know this metric, but it's a metric that we have in Chartroom. There's only one sector right now that has positive volume on it, and it's not that high. Basically, it's at 4. And so when it goes to -1, then it turns negative. And every single sector, except for energy, has negative volume on it right now. So in other words, there's more sellers than buyers. That seems to be like we're getting to an extreme. Agree?
Yeah, Jeff, I mean, unless I do not want to be dramatic, and I do not think this is going to happen, but unless we go into a 1987-type modality from here and just break, we're seeing signs that we should see some rally here, and then, you know, a lower low, and then I think a base and some healing action over the next 6 months.
Okay.
So we'll see.
When we look at like what worked and what, you know, what didn't really work on the day to day, XLP had a really bad day yesterday.
And Jeff, I'm looking at that, right or wrong, I'm looking at that as they take the best down last. And, you know, Apple, I think, is a bit of a sign of that, mixed in with the options expiration shenanigans that we've noted. Again, I'm looking at that more as a sign of optimism than a whole new leg down. You know, lots of people that follow me know that I've been looking for the 400 to 380 area on the spider, yet the messages I get and the questions that I get now that we're here are predominantly negative. And so I'm taking that as a plus as well. And I'll tell you one other thing that I think is a positive, and that is we're not just rocketing upwards. And that's really important. You know, to me, you want to see a market where there's buyers and sellers and the buyers overcome rather than just a giant short covering rally like we've seen, you know, for the previous peaks here. So I think this trading is much better, even though it feels sort of nerve-wracking. I think this trading is much better.
Right. And obviously the thing that drove lower was Walmart. Procter & Gamble had a really bad day yesterday. Coke, Pepsi, Costco, those are kind of the big things. There are some names in there. Estee Lauder, and tell me what you think about that one. Because it seems like if you wanted to bet on XLP at this point, that might not be a bad name to use.
Yeah. What's the symbol on Estee Lauder?
EL.
EL, that's a good symbol for it. Yeah, that's actually trading pretty well. I'm using MDLZ, Mondelez. That's come down nicely into support and also had a nice bad day. And it's high relative strength. Again, Jeff, you look at the intermediate charts on these things, and some of them were in the chart book. All they've done is come down to support in the bottom end of ranges. That's good, and this, again, we'll see. But this give up, you know, right as we move into my support area, is kind of what you would expect to see. Now, we'll have to see, and obviously we could be wrong, but, you know, I'm still looking for a decent bounce from here unless we really start to go through, you know, say 378 or so. And Jeff, the other thing is that's interesting here is, you know, you're seeing some earnings reports come in and the stocks react up on earnings, and that's also favorable. In other words, we're not seeing complete decimation on even good earnings. So, and we were seeing that for a while. We'll just have to see how this plays out. But, you know, knock on wood, I would still recommend dollar cost averaging good names in here, names in your models. But again, we want to be looking at September to be through with that process, not June.
So we're almost in June. The market looks forward 6 months typically. So I know no one's asked you this yet. What do you think about 2023, given like how this year is kind of playing itself out? Could that end up being a pretty decent year? I know you were not positive coming into 2022 at all.
Yeah, and Jeff, I have to, you know, if we can get a good down quarter and get my quarterly indicators super negative, we should probably start to discount some of this stuff. And again, Jeff, part of the problem with using those indicators is you're trying to essentially measure the next bar. And if you're off by a bar or two, that's 6 months.
Right, right.
But we're still not, as of the end of last quarter, we were fairly confident that this quarter would be difficult, and knock on wood, it has been difficult so far, because the indicators really didn't correct themselves at the end of last quarter. So for me, we stay with that. We see how we do and look for some bottoming action.
Okay, so last question is, It's a volatility question. It's not related to the VIX. It's just the day-to-day volatility of, you know, wide price swings. April and May now have been incredibly volatile from that viewpoint of wide price swings on a day-to-day basis. Don't you think that we're starting to get a little tired on this and that, like, June could be less volatile than April and May, or do you still think that that volatility continues for another month?
You know, Jack will make a note that we should probably put Fred's volatility indicator in if we haven't put it in the last month. But that's exactly what my volatility indicator measures. And when I looked at it informally last week, it was actually starting to build a little bit of a peak. So, yeah, I would think you're going to start to see that come down.
Okay, great. The only other question I have for you is you know, I mentioned at the beginning about how the Russell, it's almost a year now. Well, if I look at FXI and the chart of FXI, it's going on like 15 months, which is a really long time for something just to be, you know, complete crap. And look, if they end up coming out of a lockdown, let's say it works, and China starts getting more back to normal, do you think there could be from just a price standpoint and how you look at price, do you think that FXI could have a decent second half of the year?
Yeah, I do. I'm looking at other Chinese ETFs, but they're definitely holding up and trading better than I would, you know, than I feared, put it that way. They're holding this area. GXC is holding that 80 area pretty well. That gap is filled and has not gone completely berserk through on the low side. Even KWEB, which is not one of my favorites, is and CQQQ, they're holding up. They're definitely holding up. So China is, and that would be a bright spot for emerging markets as well.
Okay, perfect. That's it. That's all I got.
Good. Let's open for questions. Questions.
Fred. Hey, Fred.
Was that Steve?
Yeah. Yeah, thanks,
Steve,
Fred.
And you're in Seattle. How are gas prices there?
Yeah, I was going to say, my partner and I both drove across the state and back over the last couple of days, and it's more, you know, I paid over here, I paid a little under $5, and on the other side of the state, I paid a little over $5.
Right.
So it's not 10. We do have the highest gas tax in the country, or at least we used to. I assume we still do. But
yeah.
not $10 dramatic, no.
No, but yeah, and that's what I had read, but I... follow mostly the price of gas on the futures markets and not by state. Anyway, Steve, what can we do you for?
Great. We were all texting each other after that. Did anybody pay $10? And everybody said no. So,
that's good information. Glad to hear that.
Yeah. So first question for you. You mentioned it's time to buy a ladder. Do you have thoughts on how far out to go? I know that's not probably easy for a technician.
Most people would do a 10-year ladder, and I would easily consider a 10-year ladder. In fact, I have a 10-year ladder that was basically front-loaded, and I'm hoping that these guys, as I've got some stuff that matures actually at the end of this month, we're going to probably push that out farther than 10 years, or farther towards the 10-year mark, probably 8 years. But the Eaton Vance product at Merrill Lynch, I think they have a 10-year ladder, and that's a good one. That's one I would use.
Okay, great. Next question. You know, what from our side that we can look at, what should we be looking at to tell us, hey, this is a bottom? I thought I remembered that you like to see like a down open followed that closes high.
Right, down opens and up closes rather than ebullience and blast offs. Absolutely. So if we see more action like that, that's something that would be more indicative of a bottom. And Steve, we're starting to see that. We're also seeing very high emotion. I had several clients text me this morning saying, are you still using 380 as, your low-end target? And, Steve, we didn't get anywhere near 380 this morning. We didn't even get anywhere near 385, really. We're still above that low that we made.
But
so the sentiment's there also. I think we just need to chop around here a bit. And actually, Steve, I'm really happy that we are sort of chopping around and not just taking off to the upside. Those taking off to the upsides, I think if anyone ever doubted me that those big up moves are signs of bear markets and should be sold, they're probably not doing that after this year, I would think.
Oh, anecdotally, too, it sure seems like on my iPhone, a lot of the headlines are market could drop 50%.
This guy Manure, whatever his name is, at Guggenheim that comes out now and says we could be down 75%.
Yeah.
I don't mean to be churlish, but where the hell was he in December when I was saying we could be down 30-40%?
Yeah.
On the NASDAQ.
Okay. And then is there anything, even when tech crashed, back after the tech bubble, there were a couple of gems that got beat up too much. And, I mean, definitely want to emphasize quality, underweight tech. But I'm just curious technically if you've seen any of the really beat up ones like a DocuSign that looked better to put a little bit of speculative money into.
Steve, DocuSign actually does look like you've got some speculative possibilities there. And I know that's a good little company, and it's pulled right back to support. Steve, I've been so busy with other stuff that I really haven't had time to look for that. But if you've got some names, you're a good judge of that sort of thing. Shoot them over to me.
Okay. And then last, just a couple of dividend stocks curious about technically. KHC?
KHC. That's had a good pullback, but it's still even short-term up. So, I would be doing that. And as you say, Steve, you didn't say, but what I'm sure you mean is you want to buy dividend stocks on pullbacks. So, I would look at that here definitely.
Okay. M.O.?
That was like Halley's Comet for a while. That's a very bad joke, but we don't have anybody old enough to know on the call about Halley's M.O. That's a good one. That's one I would do.
Okay. PM.
That's a very nice one also.
Okay. BXMT.
Boy X-ray Mary Tom.
Yep.
That's holding on very well.
Okay. I'm sure this one isn't holding on well, but the news of Buffett buying some Citigroup, C.
Steve, and again, with the caveat being that I work for these people, you never had that pleasure. easily the biggest bunch of idiots I've ever worked with at a bank. But yeah, I could do that. And Steve, again, I'm going to mention, especially for our Merrill buddies on the call, if I were to see Bank of America at 33, since my downside target is basically the 32 to 33 area, I would be looking to install some of that in my 401k at that time. We're very close.
We are very close. And the last one, Ford, F.
You know, that's one I want to buy. And I probably will go ahead and buy that one. Yeah, that's a decent looking chart.
Okay. Great. Thanks as always, Fred. Very much appreciated.
Got it.
Hey, Fred, Scott.
Scott, how are you?
Doing great. Hey, on your comment of, I think spot on, taking the best down last, oil comes to mind. And,
yeah.
You know, there seems to be, I personally have an overweight there, so I'm talking my book or questioning my book. There's a divergence that's been pointed out where OIH and XOP have been making lower highs, lower lows here recently,
yeah,
versus XLE. Can you comment on that, if you think that's significant or important to watch, monitor, whatever?
You know, I'm not sure that it is, but it's something I haven't thought about. Why don't I, Jack will tell me to put that in the weekly, and I'll put that in the weekly. That's a good idea. Services versus exploration. I do think that the big production companies are going to do better, but look at RYE. Okay. The problem with XLE is it is mostly, you know, as you know, Exxon and Chevron. RYE, however, is the same pattern, and that is equal weight. So I'm not as worried about broad-based energy there.
Okay.
And I did hear, by the way, something very interesting from some of my oil buddy friends in Texas. Okay. They are basically saying that this idea that the Biden administration wants them to drill is phony, that they'll slap environmental regulations back on them after they drill. So they're going to sit it out for 2 years. They're not going to drill any more than they would normally drill. They've got some projects underway, but they're not initiating any new projects. And as they put it, if gas goes to $10 a gallon, they win. So they're not drilling.
Right.
You're not going to see a bunch more U.S. drilling. And the other thing I would mention here that is a concern in the oil patch is, and this is a little complex, but refining and what can refine what is going to be very, who can refine what is going to turn out to be very interesting.
Yeah, definitely. I don't think we've had a refiner.
Not pleasant,
in the last,
by the way, but interesting.
30 years. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. On the dollar, if we get a pullback here, which I think would be significant in a lot of respects, could that potentially kick save risk assets?
Yeah, it sure could.
Okay.
And I'm expecting, put it this way, I'm expecting the dollar to stabilize in here and not just keep going up and making new highs.
Okay.
You know, it may fall off more than I think, but I don't think it's going to, the UUP is not going to 29 here.
Okay. And on your sort of very interesting call into the end of the week, which makes sense to me, what are you looking for after this week and after Memorial Day?
After Memorial Day, I think we could see another correction into June, more pullback into June.
Okay. And your lower lows and then kind of a Pinocchio break back up?
Yeah, and then we can see, and then we pop back up and sort of stabilize is my guess.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I don't, Scott, I do not see, simply do not see a V bottom here. And I think actually a V bottom would be very bad, and I would look to short that V bottom if we were to get it.
Thank you.
Okay. Other questions?
Fred. Fred, it's
yes.
Paul in LA.
Paul, how are you?
I'm very well, sir. Very
good.
Well,
thank
sir.
You for your very kind email the other day.
You're super welcome. We really appreciate you. Looking at us coming out of our defensive shell a little bit here, not even yet equal weight, but have plans to get equal weight at 3,800 and then to go overweight at 3,600, 3,500 if we get there. You mentioned that there's, unless we see a 1987 type event, which is something I've been trying to figure out how to look for. What would be some signs that we should look for to see that things are getting loose, we've got a liquidity issue, there could be a significant air pocket of some sorts? What would be signs of
that?
The
biggest, that's a great question. I think the biggest thing would be sudden weakness in the transports, XTN and IYT and the Dow transports.
I mean, like
those are actually trading reasonably well here, but they do have bad formation. But one of the big clues, and remember, I was trading in 87. I was a broker at Dean Witter in Torrance at that Del Amo Fashion Center office, and I'm sure you even know where it is, Paul.
That's where I live.
Yeah, I know. that big building right on the end of Del Amo, right near Sepulveda and Hawthorne, that big sort of brick building. That was my office. What you saw then was in the last week before the crash of 87, you had a huge break in the transports. And I remember sitting there thinking to myself, geez, I wonder what that means, because I was brand new at this. Well, I learned what that meant fairly quickly. So that's the main thing I'm looking at, and that would also be, of course, a bad sign for the economy.
Yeah, I'm seeing FedEx being a concern that it was, you know, recently above 220 just 48 hours ago. Now we're at 195 and closer. That'll be a new low for the year. That's rather substantial in a very short period of time, from looking so special to being a significant issue in my book. Okay. Anything else?
That would be the main thing. If you see huge premium on the S&P futures versus cash and not a lot of buying, that would be another thing. But, you know, let me just talk very quickly about 87. I may have mentioned this before, but I think 87, the crash part, the last part of 87, and don't forget, for everybody, the market basically fell from 2,700 to 1,700 in 1987. The first 500 points were a decline from August into October. The last 500 points was a one-day event. Okay? And markets do crash, U.S. markets crash, stock markets crash, only after a decline of magnitude, okay? But what I think caused that crash was really mutual fund switching. And, Paul, you're old enough to remember the old days when you would call in and switch your mutual fund on the phone to a money market fund. Remember that? Well, what happened right before that crash of 87 was three major newsletters, Newrock, Prechter, and the Prudent Speculator, Frank, said that if a certain thing happened, I think it was the Dow going through the 200-day moving average or 50-day moving average or some damn thing, three major newsletters said, if that happens, switch to a money market fund. And that happened on the Friday before the Monday of the crash. And I earnestly believe that what happened was everybody used the weekend that read those newsletters, and everybody did back then, as you will remember. They used that as an opportunity to call in and switch for Monday. That caused the big down open on Monday. which set off the portfolio insurance computers. Otherwise, I don't think we would have had that crash. And I don't see anything similar to that now. So we'll have to see.
Right.
I may be wrong about that, but that's, you know, that I've always felt that way. No one's ever been able to disabuse me of that notion.
Okay. Fred, Yogesh here.
Hey, Yogesh.
In the same line, so let's say that you, the sentiments numbers that I was looking at, it is significantly negative, right? And the one argument against that one is that hey, people are not doing what they are saying, but sentiments
right.
are negative, but yet people are still not selling as much as they should be selling, and because of that, we may still have a downside risk. But my question to you is this, that, hey, we have a lot of clients sitting with a lot of cash. And I know that you are mentioning about the June correction that is still out there. Would you start investing money today?
Or? Yeah, I would start to dollar cost average into the best stuff in my models, and that would include, you know, some stuff like Apple, for example, you know, quality names. But with the idea being that we're going to be done with that process by September. And like I told somebody, it's a lot easier to speed that up than slow it down. But I would start now. I would have started two weeks ago. I have done
a little bit when it reached below 3,900. I felt that it is very... And it's a good enough for me to start. So And I think you and me talked also about it, so that worked out well. Very good. I will consider this as your blessing. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and just slowly. I mean, don't go, oh, goody, I'm loading up here. But do start putting the money in. You know, thank God, you know, let's say the NASDAQ falls 60%, something which I doubt. Because it would have to be led by Microsoft and Apple and stocks that don't look horrible technically. Even so, we've done better, you know, with a 30% decline, which is actually, Yogesh, what I've been forecasting was a 32% decline. And we're here. So I have to start to try to buy it, even though the sentiment is very negative and even though I don't feel wildly enthused about doing it either. But this is,
I mean,
this is when you have to do it.
Yeah, NASDAQ may have a little more, they may have a more downside, but I think overall market looks to me to be attractive. If I look at the, not just the energy stock, but every other stock, industrial, material, the financial stocks, the healthcare stocks, they look very reasonably priced. So that's how I look at it.
Yeah, and just, you know, we may... I'll never forget Charlie Munger saying it's a gambling casino and things go to way overvalued and way undervalued. But, you know, I do think we've got, you know, there's some stuff here that I think is going to be higher 5 or 6 years from now. And, you know, I think I've told everybody, and I'll give you a perfect example on Ford, okay? I want to buy Ford, Yogesh. It's a 1284. Okay.
Right.
I think it can go to $12.20 and then to $22. Right?
Right.
So I'm not going to buy it here. I'm going to wait for it to get to $12.20. And if it starts going up, there's no way I'm going to buy it because it didn't get to $12.20 like I said.
Correct.
Right. I do that all the time. I always feel like a horse is you know what when I do it.
Right.
Right.
I will fortunately the Fred lot of clients are sitting with lots of cash that helps in this market, and now I feel that the downside is limited.
Right. Okay. Well, let's.
Thank
I
you.
Think you're right, Yogesh. Let's see. Let's get a couple more questions in here.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Sure. Questions. Got to have one more.
Hey, Fred, Jeff, I'm coming back with something for you.
Got it.
So yesterday, If I looked at the stocks that were strong technically, i.e., their 100-day relative strength against the S&P, right?
Right.
Stronger stocks, they're down like about 2.75% on average, okay?
Yeah.
And the weaker stocks were down about 4.25%. So there's a pretty wide between them. And if we looked at, like, the S&P lost 4.05%, the Russell actually did a little better, minus 3.56%. Qs, though, were horrible. They were 4.91%. And XLK, which we both know is tech, is 4.58%. So what do you make of those disparities in terms of yesterday, which was the really bad day? The fact that, number one, the S&P underperformed the Russell. Usually when you get a complete puke day, small cap always does worse, but it didn't. And also the divergence is existing between the stocks that do have better tech ranks than have poor tech ranks.
Yeah. Jeff, we're not seeing – I don't think we have complete puke here. I think we have, you know, the market trading down into a possible low area, but we didn't see vomit on your shoes.
Yeah, there's no get me the F out at any cost occurrence.
Yeah, yeah.
Still not in that mode.
It's just not there. It's just not there.
And let me ask you a question. I'm kind of the belief that the reason that a lot of people are that way right now is I don't believe that they believe that the Fed can go as far as the Fed wants to go. So this you know, tightening stuff, it's not going to go on as long as people think it is. And inflation may get its act together quicker than people think it does. Could that be part of the reason why we're just not getting, you know, people saying, get me out at any cost?
Yeah, and I think also a lot of people are blaming all this on the war in Ukraine, which I don't think is the cause of this.
Yeah.
We all know that the market's down during a war. So let's not worry about it. The war's going to go away. All the problems are going to go away. Everything's going to look totally groovy. And I don't think that's true. But I think that's part of it. But, you know, Jeff, we are, like Steve said earlier, we're definitely seeing some signs here. But, I mean, you know, and again, Jeff, what you want to see is the next rally be greeted with contempt, right? In other words, you saw that big 900-point update after the Fed, right? When everyone said, oh, goody, the problems are over, right? I want to hear people going, you can't buy this rally. This is no good. This is a bear market rally. We've got to come down and get down 75% or whatever, right? And part of that is the trading action we're seeing now with the market going sideways in here in my target area and not just taking off to the upside.
Okay.
It's not...
And I hear a question.
Yes, Fred, it's Alan.
Alan, how are you?
I'm really well, thank you. Actually, good. Thanks to you, I'm really well, and so are the clients. I know Costco is in the chart book. I have not been able to pull the chart book up yet. Give me thoughts on Costco here. It looks like yesterday it held the 61.8% retracement, and then this morning it's kind of ambling a little bit below that. So your thoughts on Costco?
I'm looking at 400 on that as where it's going to go.
Okay. Not back to maybe 385-ish, 380?
I would be very happy buying it at 400.
Got it. All right.
And that may not be the exact low, but you almost never get the exact low. John Bollinger used to always say you get to buy the exact low and sell the exact high once in your life.
Yeah, by the smile, I get it. What about Twitter, please, sir?
I haven't even looked at that because when I see a takeover, I generally don't look at it much. But, you know, that is actually a neutral chart that's kind of interesting. Again, it's newsy, but, you know, it might go a little bit lower, but not that much lower. I'm thinking 35.5, which is a point from here.
Okay. Last one be Uber, please, sir.
This is one, Alan. I have lost money trading this every time I've traded it. Let me take a look at a longer-term chart. Probably 21 and change. 22.
Okay. I lied. One last one. CDIV, Charlie, Delta, Victor, Echo.
Charlie, Delta, Victor, Echo. CDVE. Doesn't come up.
I'm sorry. Charlie, Delta, Echo, Victor.
Echo, Victor. Ah. Let's see.
Centennial.
Yeah, Centennial. You know, I think that one I could buy that right here, Alan, down to 6, but it may not make it all the way to 6.
Look it up.
May not make it much below 7.
Very good. Well, thank you, Fred.
You're welcome. Thank you for sending the stuff you send, by the way. We appreciate it.
Oh, you're more than welcome. Look forward to seeing you one of these days or years or whatever.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'll be up that way.
Very good.
Hey, Fred, it's Rob.
Rob, yes.
I, too, was around from 1987. The good news was I didn't lose anybody money because I basically didn't have any clients yet.
Right. Yeah, but, you were just starting out.
And I got to brag that for a while. I have some dividend stocks I need to buy. So I'm looking at, do I want to buy like a consumer staples ETF, or do I want to start piecing in some of the names like Echo Labs, Honeywell, IBM, you know, versus the Procter and Gamble's, Coca-Cola, Mondelez, those names, or a combination of them?
You know, something like Honeywell I could buy now. You know, that's actually trading reasonably well. Anything that's showing good relative strength over the last month and a half, 2 months, and just leave money out if they do slaughter them after you buy them. But I think we're pretty much through the slaughtering phase.
So piecemeal a few different individual names in there, and then if we slaughter, finish it off with maybe the consumer staples ETF of some sort.
Yeah,
would you buy?
Keep looking at PEY. That's got a huge yield on it. It's great stocks, and it's basically the dividend aristocrats with a better index and less time being aristocratic.
Oh, cool. All right, I will look at that. Thanks a lot, Fred. Thanks for what you do.
Sure. Other questions? Other questions? Very well. Going once.
Hey, Fred,
going twice. Yes, sir. Yeah.
You mentioned transports as, you know, possible signal. Is there a level where you go DEFCON on that?
Let me see. Below 70 on XTN would target 50.
XTN
and right away.
And below 70 equals 50. Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I'd be very, very nervous. And then you might get a pause on that at 66. But you don't want them breaking too much. And, Scott, you'll be able to tell because they'll have an air pocket. They'll just go whoosh to the downside.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Yeah. And just for grins, let me give some statistics here. the last time we had ultra-high energy prices, inflation, and an unpopular president was 73-74. The Dow was down 55%, the S&P was down 65%, and the value line index was down just over 80%. But the good news on that was it wasn't a crash. It went down for a whole year. And again, we don't think that's going to happen, but that was the last setup we had if you're really comparing this to the 70s. That, by the way, was why the value line was the first stock index future traded in Kansas City. I don't think it's even traded anymore, but because when it was down 80%, it was able to rebound more than the S&P. But again, we don't, and the transports were in the tank the whole time for that.
Okay. And one last one. I know you're not a big VIX guy, but how do you explain away the sort of unjiggy VIX these days?
Don't laugh at me when I ask you this question. What's the symbol for the VIX?
I think VIX.
VIX. It doesn't come up on my machine. There's something, yeah. Uh-oh, this is fun. Volatility Index New Methodology. I don't know what new methodology means. But yeah, it's if you believe that you could chart it, it's a rounding bottom with an objective of 95, up from
3059. There you go.
But I don't believe you can use technical analysis on the VIX because it's not supply and demand.
Might be a Jeff question.
But I'm going to look at my volatility indicator this week, Scott, in the weekly, because I think that's a much better indicator than the VIX is. I wish I could get VIX old methodology. Do you you have stock charts? Do you know what the old methodology one would be?
Hey, Fred, it should just be dollar sign VIX on stock charts too, probably.
That's new methodology, though. I want old methodology. I don't know what the new methodology is. I like the word methodology, though.
Methodology is it hasn't changed in a long, long time. There was something way, 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 way back when that they changed it, but it's so long ago, it's irrelevant.
Yeah.
I think, Fred, the bigger answer for Scott is this, is that you look at the highs that have been made February, March, April, May, they're all around like 36. All of them hit 36 in those months. Some went just a little bit higher. But the fact is the S&P hasn't gone to much lower levels. So that's where it makes sense that the VIX is at.
Yeah, and I want to see my own volatility indicator, which I only run once a week. And we'll see how that looks. But last week it looked like that was actually peaking out. If it's not peaking out, we're going to have to duck, that's for sure.
Yeah, you know, Fred, the other thing, too, kind of related to this is I'm seeing more and more headlines about the fact that Russia is changing their objectives in Ukraine, i.e., they're about to give up, i.e., they've lost 30% of their troops are basically 6 feet under now. So if that's the case and this thing is over and it becomes very apparent it's over, shouldn't the market get some type of relief rally off of that as well? And couldn't
that might be what causes the relief rally that I'm looking for, yeah.
And couldn't it coincide with the time period in which you're looking, which is like, you know, June/July, you know?
Yeah, certainly
could. I mean, I saw something this morning that kind of anecdotally made me just laugh. McDonald's is basically giving up their entire franchise in Russia to one of the franchisees, and he's taking the liability for everything. But I'm like, oh, my God, like why are you doing that now? Just as it appears like this thing could be coming to an end. And
well, I think I know the reason for that, Jeff. I've heard the reason, and Putin's really upset about it, is it's creating a no-fly zone.
Oh, very nice. Very nice.
I've been waiting, guys. I've been waiting. Jeff, thank you. You finally gave me my opportunity. I am sorry.
I love that. That's amazing.
You
that's amazing.
On that, Jeff.
That made this call worthwhile.
Yeah.
Fred.
Are there other questions?
That was good, Fred. That was very good,
thank
Fred.
You. Other questions?
Can you hear me, Fred?
Yes, I can.
Steve Athanasi from Tampa Bay. A more macro question that we have. You know, not a day goes by that people don't ask me about housing prices, particularly here in Florida, which has been, you know, just on a tear. Things have gotten parabolic. And yet when I look at the housing index, you know, the Philadelphia housing index, some of the other, you know, indicators, it looks like there is starting to be some softness in housing. Any comments from a macro standpoint on housing prices? I asked you a month ago on REITs, and now I'm curious if there's any view that you would have on housing prices with what's going on.
You know, unfortunately, it's not a technical question. The easy answer is Georgia and Florida. You know, I think they have shown to have done better during the pandemic. Whatever you think of Governor Kemp here, he did a good job opening, and I think DeSantis is pretty good at leading this. And my understanding is, Jeff, you follow this more closely than I do, Jeff Garland. You know, Florida and Georgia don't have the cases or half, right? And we had substantially and have a better economy now because of those restrictions. And I think people are seeing and liking the way it's treated and places. And that's going to keep housing prices up. You know, I lived in Los Angeles for years. And I always was amazed that when you're sitting in Los Angeles, that you are in the middle of a desert that is not designed to sustain human life, right? So whenever you hear water shortages out there, you know, I always temper that with it may have something to do with climate change, but more it has to do with the fact that nine out of 10 people shouldn't be there, right? And people are leaving. So that's really what I think is going on. I don't think it has anything to do with technicals. I think it's a purely fundamental thing. You know, see if the higher interest rates affect it. But if people are moving from those high-cost states, I mean, my God, I read an article about people moving to Arkansas, which is a very pretty state. But certainly if you're living in San Francisco, you don't think, my forever home is Hot Springs, Arkansas. Right. No, you just don't. People just don't think that way. They're probably wrong in many ways not to think that way. But I think that's what's going on, and technicals aren't going to pick that up.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Sure, Steve. And I'm still planning on going to Tampa, and I know I have to see you when I'm there. We're working on that.
That'd be great. Thank you. Thank
sure.
you. Take care.
Good enough. Any other questions? Very well. Going once.
Fred, it's Dean.
Dean, good to hear your
voice. Hey, man. Quick one. Good to hear. Silvergate, Sam Ivory.
Huh. You know, that. Let me look at a longer-term chart of that, but that's that's trading well for a financial, and I would say you probably want to hold it with this pattern and maybe even add a little bit. I don't think it's going to do much more on the downside here. It may not do a lot on the upside. It may just go sideways, but it looks pretty decent.
Thank you, my friend.
Got it. Other questions? Very well. Then going twice. Very well. This will end the Fred Report technical market call for May 19th, 2022. Everybody have a really good weekend. And remember, this too shall pass. As I always say, like a kidney stone, maybe, but it will pass.